Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 250. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. I really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment, as it just helps me to continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically GymAware, for sponsoring this episode. I only only partner with companies that I believe in, the product and the people, and guys, Evan and Heather and everybody at GymAware are just phenomenal people, and they got a great product. If you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, please reach out to them. The next time you see them, just thank them for being a part of Iron Game Chalk Talk. This week, I'm joined by Nick Mueller. Nick is the director of golf education for RAD. He's known as the mobility caddy. He is very big in the golf world, but just somebody that I've come across through a relationship with RAD, and I just appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Ron. Pleasure to be here.
Nick, kind of go into that journey a little bit. You know, how did you get into this profession a little bit? Just write Reader's Digest, and then how did you become the mobility caddy?
Well, you know what, Ron? It was kind of being at the right place at the right time. Out here in Vancouver, myself and our director of education, Kevin Hendry at Rad Roller, we work for a performance facility out here called Innovative Fitness. And long story short, we got sick and tired of the whole tennis ball routine, taping two tennis balls together, put two tennis balls in a sock, and so on and so forth. The tape would break down, it would sticky, collect hair, dust, what have you. And so Kevin and our business owner, my employer, Curtis Christofferson, who is involved with Rad Roller as well, they created a product called the Activator, which is basically a mold, looks similar to a peanut.
Right.
And the product was called the Activator, and the company was called Tension Relief Systems. And Rad Roller was in existence in Denver, and the two companies caught each other's eye. And we realized that we had a bunch of trench experience here as professionals, and Radwell had a bunch of products. And so when the fellows from Denver came to Vancouver to discuss what we do with our products and eventually merge the companies together, I happened to be in the bathroom using the facilities, and I was shooting the shit with a gentleman named Josh, who is our CEO at Radroller. And we were talking about golf, and he liked what I had to say. And I am particularly passionate about mobility, flexibility, range of motion when it comes to all athletes, but specifically golf.
Sure.
And he has said, you know, would you be interested in basically taking our product lineup and applying it to what you do with golfers? And I said, well, here's what I do currently. And absolutely. So it kind of happened by accident, but at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, that's how it always happens, isn't it? You know,
you're
not looking for that oftentimes comes about. And then I know you're a golfer as well, and so blending passions is always something that's positive as well. You don't have any significant time in this business without making mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
You know, great, great question, and I love it. I'm also a fascial stretch therapist. So for those that are familiar that are listening to the podcast, the Stretch to Win Institute, based out of Chandler, Arizona, I was all high and mighty on my new skill set.
Sure.
And I was down in Arizona working with one of my professional golfers. And I thought I'd test out this new modality with him to show him, you know, that I've got this new skill set. We can add this to our training regimen and program. And so I performed a stretch technique on him. And essentially, unfortunately, we ruined his sequencing temporarily, I'll say. It wasn't forever. It was just temporarily, because he had so much more flexibility, not usable range of motion like mobility. he was unaware of where his club face was in his golf swing. He couldn't orient the club face. And so he started to hit it poorly. So granted, we have a bunch of tools in our toolbox, but we have to be very, very, very careful and very specific as to which tool we pull and when and who we use that tool on. So it's not a one-size-fits-all type of technique and or toolbox. You have to be very, very careful and selective as to what modality you're using. So I learned very, very quickly that way, because I mean, ultimately, when you're dealing with professional athletes, you know, you're dealing with somebody who makes their living doing what they do. So you can't mess up with that stuff.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, going around the world, I know you do as well. You know, you there's no shortage of people that understand, that know exercises and you know, have different access to modalities, but being able to sequence that properly and put it together in a proper progression and regression, that's ultimately the art of what we do.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is. You know, there's more than one way to make a bundt cake, right? You can use different ingredients, but it all depends on, you know, what the intent is and what you're trying to get out of the athlete and what type of person that athlete is too.
I absolutely. One of your lines is regress to progress, you know, and I really like that, as, you know, oftentimes we're just so focused on, you know, throwing weight on somebody or, you know, trying to look for the performance aspects of what we do. We sometimes need, you know, we forget that sometimes taking a step back is going to lead to two steps forward. What do you mean by regress to progress, and how have you implemented that into working with your clients?
Yeah. When I first took the SFMA, I was blown away by the 4x4 corrective exercise matrix. So basically, for the listeners that do not know, functional movement systems, Greg Cook, obviously, and the selective functional movement assessment, and the same body there. But basically taking somebody from a standing position and working them all the way down to the ground. And when I was introduced to that, I was blown away by basically taking somebody who seemingly is a good athlete and getting them to demonstrate certain exercise positions and understanding what they can and could not do. So when I find somebody that can't do something in, let's say, the most common body position in the gym, being loaded and on 2 feet, usually in a square stance, if they can't do something, I'm going to start to take things away from them and see if they can still do it. Instead of adding more, take some away. So I regress them from a standing position to a kneeling position, tall kneeling, quadruped, so on and so forth, and begin to take things away, even take vision away to look at the vestibular system to see what they can and cannot do, and then build them back up. So strip them down, expose them, and then build them back up.
Yeah, that I've gone through the SFMA, and I would highly recommend it to anybody that is listening as well. And it's just it's another step further than, like you said, the FMS. But how do you combat, you know, those athletes, you know, especially those high performing athletes that, you know, they don't want to show any vulnerability. They don't want to backtrack at all. How do you control that mindset?
Yeah, great question. The easiest way I've found, again, athlete dependent, but is to really show them what they can't do versus what they should be able to do. And then simply, you know, if you don't have, let's say, a right hand, let's say the left hip, you have absolutely no business adding more speed to a joint that's compromised and can't rotate. Eventually down the road, we're going to have a catastrophic event of some kind. Maybe it's a torn labrum, so on and so forth. So rather than deal with a collision further down the line, let's take care of that now and build you a foundation that is going to last you the test of time and endure the season and endure your career, you know. And I'll steal a line from Jason Glass saying, you can't shoot a cannon from a canoe. And I'm sure that makes ripples across the industry, but it's true. I want them to build a bulletproof foundation so that their body can endure the tests that a repetitive task, like swinging a golf club or anything for that matter, places on the body. So they're resilient and they have longevity, but also performance enhancement. So give them the basics, like giving them a hip, giving them internal rotation, giving them side bend in their thorax, whatever it might be, because eventually, as we all know, athletes are the best compensators. They'll find a way to get it done. But if a certain area of the body isn't mobile, then of course the body will go to the path of least resistance and put more stress on an area of the body that shouldn't be enduring that much stress, and eventually an injury will occur. So we want to keep our athletes in the game for as long as possible. We do not want them to be sidelined. And usually that really helps display my point of view with them, even though they are competitive. I say get competitive with your corrective exercise, get competitive with your mobility training so that you're able to endure and do what you do even better.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with those types of athletes, I mean, health, you know, and longevity, especially if you're dealing with a professional athlete, longevity means more money.
Is exactly, yeah.
But also, you know, if you're able to, as a practitioner, you're able to demonstrate something that they should be doing, and you're sitting at, you know, 40 years old or something, and they're at 20 years old, and you can do it, and they can't, oftentimes that creates some motivation as well, you know, and you got to play the game, right? You got to tap into that competitive spirit any way you can, and trick them into doing what you need them to do sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they might be better at putting the ball in the hole than I am, but there's no way they're going to move better than I am. You know, that's what they're coming to see me or yourself or any of these professionals and enthusiasts that are listening to the show today. You know, they're coming to you for expertise, and it's our job to expose those weaknesses, expose those little areas, those nuances that could improve them by 1 or 2%. And that improvement might last them another 5 years playing whatever sport that they're doing, or give them a little bit more power, give them the advantage on the competition.
Great. When you, you're at the level now where, I mean, you're getting, you know, the people that you see are, you know, are high level. When people, you know, when those golfers come to you, you know, what's some of the biggest either misconceptions or, you know, what are some of the things that when you go around the tour or the circuit or whatever and see people train and you cringe when you see, you know, things going on? What are the pain points in golf right now?
I'd say any modality, whether it's mobility training, flexibility training, strength and conditioning, that isn't systemized, that people are doing random acts of anything without a reason and or intent, that makes me cringe, because if you don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it, then why the heck are you doing it?
Right.
Because you saw it on PubMed or Instagram or social media, and just because a professional golfer, like for example, we see Dustin Johnson with an extremely bowed lead arm. So lots of wrist flexion at the top of the golf swing, and everybody tries to emulate that. Let's say junior golfers, right? But every single person is different with different anatomical builds. You know, Arnold Palmer said at best, swing your swing, you know, and of course there's strength and conditioning that we can do to build the biomechanical advantages and the sport specific properties of a golf swing. But it doesn't mean, you know, that you just go and do something just because you saw it. Understand why you're doing it, why they're doing it, understand the purpose behind it, and then ensure that you're consulting with and or have done the research yourself to understand fully why that person might be doing that. You know, it's very, very important to understand intent in my books. And I'll explain that to the people that I'm working with. I am doing this because I want every single person that I'm working with, whether it's on the table doing fascial stretch or doing mobility training, functional range conditioning, or strength and conditioning on the floor, we are doing this at this point in the periodization for this exact reason, and build that trust and rapport, whether it's with my athletes or the people that coach other coaches, you know, industry professionals that I might, you know, shoot information with, like you and I are right now, Ron. You know, this is why we're doing this. So that's probably what I would say I cringe the most at, is why is that person doing that? Out of curiosity, not judgment. And sure. Then understanding, you know, why. It has to be systemized. There's got to be a reason why.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the people that you come across at all levels, I mean, they're at different points in their journey as a practitioner, as where they're at in their education process. You obviously have a higher level of knowledge when it comes to mobility or range of motion or whatever, however you want to, you know, classify it. Where, you know, at some point you went and you got advanced education. Where would you recommend coaches now that maybe I came from a Olympic lifting or powerlifting background and mobility wasn't something that was, you know, very prevalent in my education process. Where would you turn first?
In terms of education, like courses or things like that?
Your courses, books, you know, just your quest to improve your knowledge base in that area.
Yeah, I'd say that the biggest eye opener for me, Ron, was when I first took the FMS, Functional Movement Systems, level one and level two, and understanding how the nervous system plays a monstrous role in our mobility. And then from there, I dipped into the SFMA, and then it's been a domino effect ever since then, FRC, and I'm PRI and all these things, the Postural Restoration Institute, and of course our RAD mobility curriculum. You know, I became and am a mobility junkie because I myself suffered for some injuries when I played collegiate level football myself, and I couldn't move. I got sick and tired once I turned into the Walking Dead in the morning when I woke up. I'm 30 years old, and you know, I've got creaky joints, and I'm not feeling well. I feel sore all the time, and I can't do certain things I want to be able to do. So to kind of backtrack, I was first introduced to the FMS in 2012, and I know a lot of listeners were introduced to it way before that, many years before that. But that changed my perspective immediately, and then I said, okay, I need to know more, and I need to know why. And I need to know how I'm going to implement all these systems, because again, I've got a bunch of tools here, hacksaws, hammers, screwdrivers, and so on and so forth.
Right.
But how do they all work together as a unit versus having individual systems that I use, you know, with certain individuals? They have to be able to work together. So I would say, look at the FMS, the SFMA. There's a ton of great courses out there. FRC is unbelievable. You know, and any of our lectures, you know, like this podcast, you know, information that you guys are so graciously taking out your time to have professionals on, you know, and speak based on their experiences and whatnot. I would say look at the audiobooks and all of the things that are out there today. There's so much information out there.
Right. Well, I think what, you know, the important piece I think I want everybody to hone in on is, it all started from you asking questions. You know, you had a pain point, you asked questions, you found FMS, you had more questions, you went to SFMA, and on and on and on. And I think that, you know, is that inquisitive quest for knowledge to improve on an area is what the profession needs in general. You know, you need to do that in all the elements or all the components of athleticism. And you know, unfortunately for us, there's guys like yourself that are experts in a specific area that are willing to provide knowledge and give back in those regards. You mentioned that you were a college football player and that you had some mobility issues and things like that. Now, you know, looking at your bio and you know, you're climbing Machu Picchu and you know, you're pretty active, you run, you know, marathons and whatnot. I mean, talk a little bit about the importance of not just being a practitioner, but being a practicing practitioner.
Yeah, I love the fact that you brought this up, Ron, because I truly believe in our profession, whether you're a strength coach, a clinician, whatever it is that you do in our industry. I had a friend once say to me, you know, in your industry, your body is your business card, really. You know, if you don't look the part, then why would I come pay you, subject my body to you, and give you my hard-earned money to seek out your advice when you have a hard time even taking care of yourself? Now, granted, there are circumstances, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm not really interested in going to a dentist that has poor teeth or oral hygiene, or perhaps getting a tattoo from a tattoo artist that doesn't have any tattoos. You know, so you have to look like you're the part. right? So for me, being a bigger guy, I guess you could say, for doing marathons and all these extended heights, I'm 6'3", 240 pounds. And I did these half marathons and hiked Machu Picchu and whatnot, and rode a 120 kilometer Grand Fondo up. We have a Sea to Sky Highway here in Whistler where the Winter Olympics were held in 2010. Because I thought, you know what, my clientele and the environment in which I'm in here at our gym, Innovative Fitness, they got to be able to see that I can do everything that I am telling them to do.
Right.
Ride a bike 120 kilometers and go for a 22.4, you know, half marathon run or whatever it might be. I want to know what it feels like so that when I prescribe certain things, I know exactly what that person's going to go through. Now, granted, I did that, you know, earlier towards 2010 and whatnot, but I still like to challenge myself. I am out there taking golf lessons because when I go out with my tour players, you know, granted, they're going to absolutely smoke me, but at least I want to be able to hang and say, you know what, we're not going to take 6 hours to play a round of golf here. I can hang with them a little bit and play and enjoy the game when we can talk about certain things. And they understand fully that I understand what they need to do.
Right.
Because the more I can relate to them, the more they're going to trust me. Otherwise, they're going to be like, well, you know, if that person doesn't know who Hank Williams Jr. is, then why are we talking about country music? You know, like you just don't know the same, you know, we're not talking the same thing. So I could kind of ramble there, but I love that question. You got to look the part. If you're a strength coach, be strong. If you're an Olympic lifter, lift Olympic weights and do Olympic lifting. If you're a yoga instructor, do yoga. Doesn't mean you, that's all you have to do, but you better be pretty good at it so that these people can understand, you know, why you're an expert and why your title is what it is.
Agreed. Well, I think, you know, not only that, but I think you're your own laboratory to some degree, you know, and you know, before you, you almost like the Hippocratic Oath, right? You don't want to be practicing on somebody else and risk their health, you know, without having at least experienced it to some degree yourself.
100%. Well, you know, we are all, you know, in our profession, we're the hamsters on the wheel, both in our mind, but also our body, right? I see something and I get creative and I go, okay, how does that feel? Because if I can't do it, you know, I'm not going to ask that of my athlete if I can't even get into position to demonstrate what I'm trying to get them to do, nor do I understand what it's supposed to feel like or what tissues I'm exercising or whatever it might be. We could go on and on, but absolutely. Yeah. You got to be able to walk the walk.
Great. And, you know, the added benefit of obviously being able to have, when you're in this profession, you got to have a stress release. You got to have something that you can, you know, when you're working 15, 16 hours a day, that's not healthy unless you're willing, you have the ability to release that somehow, some way. So
100%.
I couldn't agree with you more. Well, man, we sandwiched this episode in between some training sessions for you. So we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, man. You know, I got to go back to my football days. And I think we've all heard this quote, and I hate to be cliche, and I hate to say it, but I believe the quote goes, whether you think you can or whether you think you cannot, you're right.
Right.
In other words, if you doubt yourself, you know, you're not going to be able to do it. You always have to believe in yourself, and it's okay to have failures. We look at some of the greatest athletes and business people in the world, and they got where they are because they sprung forward. They had a failure. They had a learning experience, if you want to call it that. Instead of a failure, we tripped up and we made a mistake and we got better. You know, we learned from our mistakes. Keep grinding, keep pushing forward, make mistakes, just make them on yourself, and have fun. What we do is an absolute blessing. We are blessed to have people come to us and trust us with their knowledge and their body and their money and their career to help them. Have fun at what we do. What we do is absolutely awesome. I wouldn't have it any other way. Like I'm showing up to work and wearing gym shorts and a gym shirt. I mean, we hit the lottery here. This is great. I don't have to sit in a cubicle with a collared shirt on and dress pants. And no offense to those that do, but you know, for those of us that are in this you know reality, we're in a playground all day long, and it's great. So always believe in yourself. Always think you can. Challenge yourself. Stress causes change. Go have some fun. Enjoy it, and don't be afraid to fail.
Agreed. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a You Know What. That was a brilliant book. It was an easy read because it was different than what we currently read. We're all buried in research, how to get stronger and faster, and what's the latest research on this and that. And we're diving into, you know, for us at Radroller, it's Kevin and I are looking at the latest research on tissue and fascia and all these different things and whatnot. Having a nice read where you actually get a chance to sit down, have a chuckle because of how the book is written and how it's articulated, and actually apply those principles and go, wow, that is me. I do that. Life isn't so serious. Life isn't so complicated. Life is pretty fun. Take the blinders off and enjoy it. I would say that book was a great, you know, hang out by the fireplace in wintertime and read that puppy. That was a great read. Websites, recommendation. I'm going to draw on my golf experience here and in my golf background. The Titleist Performance Institute has an amazing, amazing, amazing library for junior development, for just developing athletes in general. It's not necessarily all golf specific, but movement pattern based. If you're looking for a video library of thousands and thousands and thousands of exercises and examples of how to challenge your junior athletes and or athletes in general differently, www.mytpi.com is phenomenal for that exercise library. And app recommendation. That's a great one, Ron. Geez, I'm not even sure where to go there. What do I use? I like Coach's Eye. I think it's great. It's a phenomenal application. Edgify, actually. For those of you that have not used Edgify or haven't heard of it, it's an unbelievable platform to build a team around your athletes. So if you have, let's say, a strength coach, a mental coach, and a, let's say, a technique coach, like an actual sports-specific coach, to create a profile where the athlete and all the coaches, no matter where the athlete is in the world, you can communicate back and forth, even if the professionals are scattered throughout the country from east to west. You can have a profile where you're able to communicate to this athlete, medical professional, strength coach, and sports-specific coach, or whoever your team is, so that that athlete feels surrounded and taken care of. And you can point things out, because we all know that sometimes it's really tough to get the emails. It's tough to hop on the phone. But we can always, no matter where we are and what time zone we're in, we can always write a little note and send video footage to help our athletes and clients out.
You said that's Edgify. How do you spell that?
EDUFII.
Perfect. Yeah, I hadn't heard that one. That's great.
It's phenomenal. Man. It's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like the Facebook. Maybe that's not a good reference right now, but it's a great tool. We'll leave it at that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And you know, I think it, you know, what I love about this show is, you know, there's the coaches that are just caught up in just being a technician and only doing the job and focused on their athletes. And that's a noble in and of itself, because we all know that coaches touch more people in 1 year than most people do in their entire life. But to be a coach, to be doing that, and then to also turn around and give back to the community through resources and sharing was even more of a higher calling, in my opinion. So I appreciate you doing that on a regular basis, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
I can't thank you enough, Ron. Thank you so much for having me on your platform. It's wonderful what you guys are doing out there, and I really do appreciate the time and the opportunity. So thank you very much, and to all the listeners, enjoy your passion. It's a beautiful thing, and we're awfully blessed to do what we do. Have fun.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.